Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3. Hello and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast. I'm Darren Moser. And joined with me is married man Philip Gilfus. How are you doing, Philip?
I am doing wonderful. Things went perfectly. I mean, there's not even a complaint.
You can't even describe it. It was so amazing.
No. I mean, I'm just saying, look, the pictures, they'll all be coming online soon. So you'll see them soon.
Now, I want to know how the murder mystery happened and who did it, but I guess, we'll wait till later. You can tell me later.
Spoilers. That's right. No spoilers.
Yeah.
Right.
But,
it was actually a suicide.
So
A twist.
Yeah.
That is a twist.
Seen that before.
Every character is listed under the suspect, so including who gets killed, so.
There you go. Oh. And I'm also joined with soon to be married. To the end of the episode. Daniel Prue, we wish him well.
Hey, guys.
No, we always are happy to have Daniel here to balance out the 33% of the podcast that is not married.
Yeah, Daniel, tell me what it's like to be single.
No, in all jest, but we are very happy for Philip that his wedding went well and the fireworks didn't explode inside the tent, but instead were outside as intended.
Right.
Well, today, as we talked about last week on City Alpha 3, we are going to be talking about holographic personas, and specifically the three big ones that we get in Trek. And we're going to start... we're going to actually go in order of screen time. So you can guess who we're going to start. Yeah, I know. That's a new curveball. Of the three we're choosing, it really helps set the stage.
We're going to talk about putting our hands in some, things in the holodeck, and that's how you get pregnant? Is that what we're...
No, we're not. Okay, that's not a holographic character. I'm not talking about I'm talking about the three characters that... You know, sometimes they're part of the crew, but other times they're just annoyances. Well, I'll let you judge on who is who. But we're going to start with Professor James Moriarty, created haphazardly in an hilarious situation by Geordi when he asked the computer, make a character that can defeat Data.
Well, is it really Geordi's fault, or is it just
It's totally Data's fault. Okay. Argue. The bench is yours, Daniel. Why is this Pulaski's fault?
I would put the blame on both of them. It was her stupid, dumb reluctance to like Data that caused them to do this in the first place. So,
I mean, true. We do know that Pulaski doesn't apparently usually like Data, yet she's willing to dress up and go into Sherlock Holmes program 3A with
And not only that, like, she goes in there. She goes into, like, Data's program where Data goes to have fun, and then he's like, no, his fun isn't real. His fun's just stupid
and
dumb.
You're a fraud. Wait, did you think he was actually Sherlock Holmes, but then that's where the fraud part comes in?
So, I don't know. I blame part of it on Pulaski, because she's just going in there and being a buzzkill, man.
Now, of course, what I'm picturing for the cover art for this episode is a picture of Moriarty with the caption, "Did you miss me?"
Nice. Well, I'm picturing now, you know, when Geordi was asking for the program, did it like autofill? You know, did you mean to say a character that is capable of defeating Sherlock Holmes, but it actually auto-pasted in Data? Because you talked about Data so much. And so it's really the autofill
it's like the text to type is, I don't know, I assume by the 24th century is a little bit better.
The voice to text, yeah.
Yeah, it's not always perfect.
But anyway, so we get this Sherlock Holmes program, we get James Moriarty, and he pretty quickly becomes self-aware. But it's an interesting type of self-aware in the fact that he realizes that he's more than just a mindless program, but he still, you know, he's still bound by the abilities and knowledge of someone from that century. And it's really interesting to watch the character as he evolves and as he, you know, starts to draw pictures of the Enterprise and starts to realize how to exert his control. And we're seeing a physical manifestation of a computer program that is exploring the Enterprise computer and is eventually tapping into sensors and comms and weapons. And it's, I mean, in the bigger picture, it's really fascinating whether or not you like the character as a whole, just the way it's presenting the computer, as it were, becoming more aware, or at least a portion of it. So it's a really unique character.
Well, and it's kind of the continuation of, really, with the introduction of the holodeck in Encounter at Farpoint, we're told, oh, it can recreate situations and scenarios, and then they're like, oh, and people too, characters as well.
Right.
And then we get a big bump, a big upgrade in what the holodeck can do with Minuet, and then here again, another leap. So, you know, it doesn't take Star Trek very long to get to right to, like, can I play Batman in the holodeck to, now we can make sentient living creatures. But, you know, it's science fiction, and that's what it does. And obviously Moriarty is the first stage of that super advanced type of program, which we will start to talk about other examples of that as well. But he is the earliest. He's the least capable, but that still doesn't mean that he isn't really interesting. And like, this kind of exploration of this idea is really, it's really well done, I think, in both of these episodes, because both of these episodes, I think, are fantastic. And I really like the character of Moriarty. So I think it works really, really well, showing early on in the holodeck life cycle, like, this is sophisticated and this thing can do pretty amazing things. So,
yeah, and
that's
it's true. Goes
I'm
to
glad
the...
you mentioned Minuet, because I had forgotten about that portion of the holodeck. And yes, she's turbo boosted from the binars, but you also see, you know, that is setting the stage for what Moriarty will be. What do you think, Philip?
Well, I was going to say that the nature of what it is to be a holodeck character, and self-awareness, I don't know if sentience, and again, you know, these are philosophical terms and specific and semantics, but self-awareness, just general, I'm a hologram and I'm aware that I'm a hologram. I mean, that's more what Moriarty gets with, like, okay, but can I be more than that? And, you know, even when you get the first major holodeck episode with Picard, Big Goodbye, sorry, it took me a while to think about that. Wow, the Big Goodbye, where you have...
Philip, come back! Oh, we can't do the podcast without you! Is why we're recording a week early.
Now there's two.
Philip, come back. The percentage of people who are married is at 50%. Are you dating someone, Daniel? I thought you were.
I am.
Last I heard. Okay, I am. That's what I thought.
Yep.
Not to pry into your.
Oh no, I don't mind
private
sharing.
Life.
She lives far away now, but the plan is she's going to come back and she's going to move back here at the end of the summer. So.
Oh, great. Is she away for, like, school or?
She actually just got out of the military.
Ah.
So she wanted to spend some time back at home with her parents and kind of decompressing for a few months before getting back to, like, real life and stuff.
Well, that's nice too, because then she necessarily won't be getting deployed in the future, so that's one less thing to.
Yeah, well, certainly nobody could have foreseen these sorts of circumstances, you know.
True.
She had done her time, like, she had done over 8 years, so.
She was ready to be done.
She was ready to be done already. Yeah, this was. She got out in fall of last year, or late summer, probably August or September, I think. So, September it was, so.
All right, Philip. We'll start off with you with your thoughts, sure, on Moriarty. So, what are your thoughts, Philip?
Well, I think it goes to the nature of being a hologram, because even in the Big Goodbye, the sort of the big TNG, the first TNG hologram episode or holodeck episode, where you get, so, you know, Silas Redblock, and he's like, "Oh, what's it mean? I'll go conquer this world." Ah, and then he walks outside and gets deleted in a hilarious way. Looking back, you're like, "Oh, hey," he steps out. I think he's good. Oh no, wait, he's being erased. But then you get, so, but the nature of what does it mean when a Holodeck character realizes they're a Holodeck character. And then when you get Moriarty, he's being self-aware about that and is fine with it. Okay, I get it. I'm a Holodeck character. I got it. But then what more can there be? What more is there? And then I think it's interesting because I think with Elementary Dear Data, it's sort of like, I think it's a good episode, but it sort of has like a very non-event. It's like, oh, we created Moriarty. He kind of quote unquote kidnaps Pulaski, but then like it's a very gentlemanly kidnapping. And then it sort of like ends with like, yeah, what are we going to do? Save you. You know, we'll figure it out later. Like, it's not a very, and then that's when you get the follow up where it's, you know, what are you going to do with him? How do you solve a problem like Moriarty?
You trick him and lie to him
and lock him in a cube.
Because nothing bad could ever happen from a scenario like that.
Some sort of box that, just, you know, who else had a box? Pandora.
Well, that's true. Actually, he wasn't in the cube yet. That was after the second episode.
No.
The first one, they just closed his program.
And well, then, they didn't close it. They left it in hibernation or whatever it was because he was aware of time passing.
Yeah, that's got
to
be.
Barclay was looking to free some space programs. And
we all know what kind of programs.
Hollow addiction is a real problem, Philip. So,
yeah, the first step is admitting that your friend has created an artificial life form. And that's what we need to focus on, not my programs, Captain.
To be fair, Barclay's programs, while you may consider them distasteful, did not cause this problem. That's right.
That's true. That is true.
He was fine minding his own business with his programs, but no,
the
everybody
goddess of love. Never
everybody had
anyone.
To show up, and he kind of invaded privacy. That's all I'm saying, man. No, thought crime on the Enterprise, true. Man. It's not right.
But yeah, so we do see Moriarty again in Ship in the Bottle, where he and the Countess Bartholomew want to go on a date, or basically they want to leave the holodeck.
They want to rule the world. But I think, you know, and he wanted, I mean, he was nefarious, because, and that was a sort of interesting nature. How much is the parameters of the Moriarty character, and then how much is he building on top of that? So
right.
his means are Moriarty. But, you know, that may not be who he is as a life form. And then even then, that kind of ended, I won't say it ended bad, but it sort of ended in a, he's in a box. And so it's sort of like, well, is that a responsibility to a life form? You know, I guess he's a quote-unquote dangerous life form, but...
It you know, sits.
Yes.
In its box.
Waiting.
Well... Well, I don't think either of you have read the book, but the Light Fantastic is one of the novels from the more recently published TNG novels, and it deals with Data and Lol and Moriarty, and he's actually, we kind of find out what happens to his character, and it's really good. I like the way they continue that character, and again, always ask these questions of how is he perceiving things, and because he is a man in that regard, but he's also a program and he's also a hologram, and it's very interesting how, you know, what is guiding his moral compass, how is he making decisions, and how is he experiencing time. And so if you are looking for finding out what happens after the box, they do follow that up a bit.
Wait a minute, so Lol comes back too? I assume this is post Nemesis, right?
Yes, this is post Nemesis. This is basically I think Data becomes more self-actuated in B4 and is basically Data now, but he retires from Starfleet. So he's off doing his own thing. And he has Lal on a planet, and there's like someone not hunting, but like trying to find all these androids. So we actually see some like TOS era androids, like Mudd's Women and such. And because it's like kind of this close-knit community of androids that are like at that level, which is kind of interesting.
That's cool.
Because they do exist, you know, in the Star Trek universe. But Moriarty's, it's been a while since I've read it, but I think he's trying to get some androids to become his body, basically. Which makes sense, you know, so he can enter into our world. But it really kind of heartbreakingly goes through, you know, what happens basically. You know, his life is going normal and he's living like this normal existence where he has two children and, you know, they're off exploring the galaxy and they're kind of none the wiser. And then the Enterprise D crashes and it causes damage to the cube, and it like erases his children, but he's aware that they were there but not there. And it just, it's as if like you're in the middle of a movie and then everything just stops and is just broken. And it's just, it's really well written. I like it how it's exploring this very non-human characteristic of like how, you know, he's trying to perceive things and trying to access things and trying to fix things, but it's like you're a broken, you know, you have some sort of, you know, dementia almost. And it's just, it's very, it, I like those portions of the book as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, you know, they don't, they kind of frame it this way in the second episode. What's it called?
Ship in a Bottle.
Ship in a Bottle.
Didn't anyone play with ships and bottles?
But in a way, especially if they followed it up with a third time, or I don't know if they addressed this in the book or not, but really at that point, they're creating a villain. Like, they're making him worse and worse and worse by, like, not telling him or
that's, you know, true,
being deceptive. Like, they're creating like this ultimate super villain.
They do create the situation that creates the villain of Moriarty.
Yeah, so like the first thing is obviously an accident, and he doesn't really do that much harm, I mean, honestly. But then, you know, years and years of neglect and lies and deception would really cause anybody to go kind of crazy. So,
and because he's a program, or he's a life form that can just be ignored, that's the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, and he's a challenging life form, you know, that was accidentally created, that they don't have a way to survive, well, to help him survive or to thrive. Yeah. And so,
I think they should have sent him to, like, Jupiter Station or something to, like, and to be running, but also, I mean, let him run and let him, you know, also...
In a holographic field.
Well, no,
like
that's
when
what I meant.
We took the dog away when I was a little, and they took him to a farm.
No, I was saying, like, let him work on his own, you know, solution to like, I mean, and then later we're going to get mobile emitter technology. So it's like, let him become a productive member trying to solve his own issues as well, but don't leave him locked away in a box. So, but, well, moving on to our second, not super villain, he's not a pretty stand up guy, but our second. Sorry, our second, as far as time that we see him, we have Vic Fontaine, the 60s lounge singer from Earth, Las Vegas. And I know some people like this character and some people don't, but it does add a, it's just kind of this, I would say in some ways he almost represents the audience in the fact that he is interacting with these characters in a completely different way that is outside the Star Trek way, not representing in a like Galaxy Quest kind of like, I know who you are meta way, but you know, he's just like, this is the limits of my program. And I'm going to talk about love and about relationships and about, you know, money and jazz and things like that. And, you know, it's I've heard it described as this shouldn't work, this concept for like stories, but it actually does in some, and he definitely has hits or miss. I mean, we start seeing him in, you know, His Way, which is a pretty good episode in season 6. And then, you know, there's some high notes and low notes. He helps Nog through, you know, his PTSD, and we get, oh, it's only a paper moon right there. There's some mirror episodes we won't really talk about. And, but and then again, he's also at the end in What You Leave Behind. And you have Bada Bing, Bada Bang, which I think is on the lower liked end of Vic's appearances. But what do you two think of Vic? I mean, as a character, as a something that was done in Star Trek, like, does it float? Does it work? I mean, he's in 8 episodes. That's quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me how, you know, Voyager tried a variety of holodeck recreational atmospheres and environments.
True.
I don't know if they didn't work or they just wanted to keep on trying new ones, but with Vix, you know, because it's a space station, well, I mean, even if it was a starship, I guess that doesn't matter, but, you know, where do they relax? You know, do they go to the Replimat? Do they go to the Klingon restaurant? You know, there's not, for some reason, that many recreational, I mean, Quark's Bar, I guess, but then everyone's there and it's kind of crowded. And so sort of you have the place to get away is Vix, and, you know, it can either be with everyone or it can just be, you know, date night.
Does
over
everybody know your name?
Right. Well, he certainly does, but he's programmed too. So, and I enjoyed it. It is weird, like you said, on paper, but I never had a problem with him, and that being sort of a weird, you know, you have this big war going on, and Star Trek and Deep Space Nine, and like, oh, here's the 1950s lounge. And so it's like, yeah, you know what, it's fine.
Yeah, I would almost see Vic as a continuation of Minuet's character, because I don't remember if he actively does this, but like you just said, I mean, he knows everyone's names because he can access the manifest of the station. You know, he can actually, you know, go beyond, or he hides that extra ability within his program because it's very, you know, in that shell of a 60s lounge singer. I mean, even so far as like, oh, I actually have, you know, problems and you need to help me with those problems. It's like, do we really need to help you with those problems, Vic? But what do you think, Daniel, of Vic Fontaine?
I like Vic as a character. I do. I'm just trying to think of how I want to word
convince
this.
Me that you do, Daniel. No, it's all right.
He brings an interesting presence to the show, for the limited amount that he's actually on it. But he obviously has a significant impact. I get a little tired of the shtick of Vic, like the shtick of Vic.
Vic shtick.
Yeah.
All right, Pally boy.
Yeah, you know, like, why would anybody relate to this? Like, okay, I was born slightly outside of that era, and I know I get some
slightly.
You know what I'm saying, but I still get I get cultural references to it. I understand, right. Like, I know the music and stuff. Why these people would have any interest in, like, this is like us watching something from, you know, filled with 16th century pop culture, and like, it's, you know, it doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't. That's what bothers me, but that's like in universe nerdy.
What do you mean? I always go hang around the French Salon. When I'm not around you guys. We talk enlightenment ideas.
Well, to be fair, actually, I mean, we make this argument several times that, you know, looking 300 years back is like the 16th century for us, but there's also the fact to be said of documentation. Modern times is way more documented than 300 years ago. So it actually kind of does lend itself that 300 years from now, you know, looking back, you know, it makes more sense you're going to pick something from the modern era as opposed to, you know, the Middle Ages or something.
Well, right. I think you're forgetting, Darren, about a little something I like to call World War III that kind of wiped out all of our records on what was going on beforehand.
I don't know. They seem to know pretty much a lot of that happens in the 90s and the 80s. So I don't think they wiped out as much as you would think.
No, I think most of the tweets did get wiped out, so that is...
The great tweet purge.
Yeah. It's just like, if you could go into a holodeck and go into any time, any era, any place, I only know, like, maybe one person I've ever met in my whole life that's under the age of 70 that would choose, you know, this era, this time, and this place. Like, it's just so uninteresting, and so obviously one of the writers, you know, had a parent that was really big into this or something. No.
Well, this was Ira Stephen Barr's baby. He actually wanted this character in season 5 and then, or actually I think a little earlier, and then it didn't end up happening until season 6. But, you know, it is a bit of a left curve.
Yeah, and I mean, James Darren is actually a very big get. I mean, this is not only does he have the musical chops, I mean, he's a legit sci-fi classic actor. I mean, Time Tunnel, I mean, that's one of the original sci-fi TV shows, in my opinion. That's sort of like, to me, it's always a precursor to Quantum Leap, how I think about it. But, you know, and it was funny because playing Vic sort of, I mean, I have the album that he released after playing the character, just most of all the songs he sang on the show, and used them during my wedding. And so it was interesting, again, the nature of holodecks. I mean, of course, that's the direction I'm always going. Because when Nog was the first time? But anyway, when he was running continuously,
right,
and he sort of had, like, I don't know if it was the Nog episode or not, but anyway, and he sort of like had all this freedom, and he actually was like going outside of his club and living a life, and he had an apartment, and it was sort of a cool balancing his books and all these different things and going on dates, and he's like, oh, it's a whole new life. And then, you know, how much do, even though he's self-aware, how much are his parameters versus like, you're just the self-aware guy singing in this bar versus like, well, you would have a life in this universe.
Yeah, it's, I mean, we do, as we'll talk later when we get to the doctor, like, who has a family and other things in some episodes, but yeah, it's...
And sex.
Could you leave those programs?
It's pretty
strongly
implied, so does Vic, I will say. He has some fans. Well, of
look, the episode title was Bada Bing. I don't know how much more we can...
Yeah.
Bada Bing, Bada Bang, don't forget.
And to be fair, Philip, you were just implying that the kind of programs that Barkley was running were maybe not PG-rated, so...
Well, they weren't self-aware. Which actually makes it worse, I
suppose. I was just going to ask, does that count as...
Well...
Yeah, no, it doesn't. No. It does not. But, yeah, it makes sense. I get it. I like Vic. I really don't, generally speaking, have a problem with him. I just have a problem with all these aliens and people, like, picking this one super, to me, super uninteresting. Like, Sisko has a problem with it at one point, like the first time he's asked to go into it. And I actually really like that, because that's a really cool way to kind of put... I do. I like it for social commentary. It's done very well. If you want to argue that maybe why would Sisko have... Well, no, I don't know. I think it's done well. And
I'm making faces for those who can't tell. Yes. They're listening right now.
I think it's done well. But, yeah, that would be a problem, the way that... there's just a lot of problems with that era or with that issue. Like, it's all smoky. I don't think... maybe they'll just filter that out, I guess.
The safeties are on, Daniel. There's no secondhand risk.
The music is terrible. No, obviously that's subjective, so I am not going to say that either way. It is,
I mean, if we want to, and we talked about monocultures a couple of weeks back, it is very Western, American, of course.
Yep.
It would be interesting to see a non-Western influenced culture holiday character from either that same era somewhere else or even farther back in time.
But even like, look at Minuet, and it's not the exact same scenario, but it's similar enough that it's like, no, we should get something different going on here. Right. Nightclub in an American city, in the early mid 20th century. And it's like, I guess we've done this before. Obviously it's an American show, so we're going to keep doing it, but I don't know. It feels like a lack of imagination. And again, like if you were mentioning, Darren, if it was Iris Stephen Bear's idea, it feels like a love labor of the writer, which is like great.
And everyone else fell in love with, and then they put him in 8 episodes.
Yeah. Which is the same.
Isn't bad. I'm just saying they did.
No, exactly. It's the same issue I have with baseball. Like somebody, who I can't remember who it was. Somebody.
Sisko likes baseball. Obviously, we know that, Daniel.
Somebody that wrote Star Trek loved baseball, and now.
You're not saying it right, Daniel. Come on now.
See, look, Janeway has her coffee cup on her desk, and that's why we know she loves coffee. Sisko has his baseball, and we know he loves baseball. Picard has his antiques.
The Shakespeare book.
Yeah.
Oh, he does.
Obviously. Archer's got his water polo ball. It all makes sense.
He has a dog.
Hey, there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with Porthos. I will say that.
Well, yes. Well, no, I think overall it's probably good that the character came about in season 6 and later, so he was used but not overused. I mean, I can't imagine this character coming in at like season 4 and then being like, 3 or so episodes per season. That would be a lot. But yeah,
and I think for Deep Space Nine, it was a way to literally get away from the war.
Yep. Yes.
Because the Dominion War is always going on.
They used it tactfully. I do agree with that.
Yeah.
Right,
And you can see how it's believable that the characters would want to get away to something that was so non. And again, that's something Star Trek never really says, that humans feel spacey. This is just life,
like Kevin.
They're not like, oh my gosh, there's an alien walk through the door. It's like, no, this is just a person. So it's not like they're trying to escape to a time when there were no aliens, but it is trying to, I think.
Ew, you got to be careful where we're going with that one, Darren.
Make Earth great again.
Oh, jeez.
Got to be careful what you're implying on that one.
But, you know, but they're going to a time where,
well,
you know,
it's very
simple.
Right. I mean, the Federation being a pluralistic society, I mean, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be around your culture, your traditions. Like, I mean, sometimes it's in your family or whatever, but you could have your holodeck program like, oh, this is my ancestors. You know, it's not meant to be, no one else can come, but it's sort of like, instead of having 50 million alien races on Deep Space Nine, this is just what it's like to be a human or whatever. And, you know, as long as you're not excluding people, it's fine. You know, just like I'm sure Worf has his own Klingon nightclub program, you know, whatever. And Quark has his own Ferengi nightclub program. Of course, it's called Quark's Bar. It's not very original.
It's nested. It's Quark's Bar and Quark's Bar. Yeah. He comes and sits in Morn's seat, and then Quark serves him.
Oh, you get to play Morn. That would be the greatest holodeck program.
Could you just sit there?
I want to make an Oculus Rift program now where you play Morn, and all you do is you watch the crazy happenings and shenanigans of Quark's Bar.
Have you guys seen the VR Star Trek game?
I've seen, didn't LeVar Burton and Jerry Ryan play it?
Oh, yes. They were the ones that was like last year. That was when it was introduced. Yeah. It's basically been, I'll just briefly mention it. It's basically being released very shortly, or has been.
Ooh,
nice. And four people play. One's the captain. One is engineering. One is helm, and one is something else.
Weapons
gotta maybe be, yeah probably yeah weapons yeah and basically you obviously have your role, and the captain yells orders and stuff, and it's supposed to be really cool, really interesting. So anyways, I'd love to play that, but we'll see in the future.
Love to play that. It's kind of like Artemis, basically.
It's exactly like Artemis, but yeah. And Artemis,
but I mean Artemis was basically
was Star Trek,
what
yeah.
this was
yeah,
yeah.
So
no.
Well, I have a question. Which station is the plumber at?
I don't think that's
a Mario reference.
No, I think we were talking about the importance of plumbers in all society.
No, you were talking about the importance of plumbers in all society.
That's DLC, so that's going to cost you $10 2 months from now.
Gosh. It's like your loading time would go 10% faster if you installed the plumber plugin.
Anyways, sorry.
Okay. Well, I don't know if I could transition out of that, but the next character, which we see in probably almost every episode of Voyager, so he definitely wins in the amount of screen time, we have the Doctor, activated in 2371. The EMH Mark I was only meant to be running for a little bit, but instantly go out of, you know, character, but into real life. Like, this is a great character. This is such a great idea. A character with limitations, which eventually got loosened. But I think they really struck gold. And then with Robert Picardo's performance and what he brought to the character. And I think, you know, instantly one of many people's favorite Voyager character, if not the most liked character in that series. So the Doctor, you know... from, like I said, limitations. I mean, he starts off where he can't leave his sick bay. Like, could we at least put a holo emitter in the corridor or something so I could drag people in, you know? But isn't there an episode where someone, like, collapses, like, right outside the door, and he's like, I can't reach you! Like, you're right there! But, you know, or at least put a emitter on the bridge or somewhere. But, you know, and then for getting the mobile emitter to, I think, full circle with the ECH, having a family, you know, interacting with holographic life forms on the planet, you know, as the president of Earth, you know, there's so much that they do with this character. Sometimes I agree. Some people say, like, not overused, but it's like, you know, definitely in later seasons, it's like, oh, look, it's another Doctor episode. Like, of course, you know, it's a Seven or a Doctor or a Janeway episode, like over and over and over and over and over. But, you know, to his credit, I think it's well placed because it is such a great and dynamic character, and they do so much with it. But it never feels like they're bending, you know, it's Star Trek, it's science fiction. It's really important, the rules, you know, that we have to follow, but I never feel like they're over bending those to fit the Doctor in, you know, adding the mobile emitter is a good progression, I feel, but maybe you disagree with me. Daniel, what are your thoughts?
No, I do agree with almost everything you say. The mobile emitter is a cheat to me, like a super cheat. It feels like I don't understand the mechanics of how it would work, and I know I'm not supposed to, but it feels like a perpetual motion machine because it can generate what it's supposed to be attached to while it's not being attached to it, but it's okay because it can generate. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand how something that small, but
get the fact that I don't, well, I guess cause it's 29th or whatever century.
Exactly.
It's like, but it's like, how does this whole program, you know, the program that fits in the computer fit inside it? But again, if it's from the future, you kind of get a little,
I always assumed it was streaming, but that can't be the case because
they transfer the program to it.
Which also seems pretty risky. Anyways.
So here's my question though. You know, the mobile emitter is used on the doctor, but what was it meant for in the 29th century?
I never understood that either. I was always curious about that.
That's true. And it must have just been in the time pod. So, because I don't believe the guy made it. He didn't backwards engineer it. He just had it and then he activated it. So I think that's a really good question, Philip. Maybe some sort of another emergency program or like a communications interface, like the person you're talking to just appears.
You need, like, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think, maybe it's like a super replicator. Like you need something. And so you just have the holographic recreation and then you slap the emitter on it. So now it's real, quote unquote. And then you can, you know, move it someplace else and then move it back and then get rid of it and then download something else. And then, you know, so that way you don't have to have the same thing lugging around just for short purposes use.
Because the way I understand the technology is, you know, it's a microcomputer. It's super, you know, advanced enough to hold an entire holographic program. And then it's basically a tiny force field projector and matter replicator. And it's basically, or not matter replicator. No, it's pretty much just force field. It's just projecting the photons of the, and using force fields to give it substance.
Though it's also very fragile. Like if you slap that thing with a clipboard.
Oh yeah. That thing would go down.
But there are times when people will hit him or something and he'll just like flutter and the thing doesn't drop to the ground.
That's where he can turn.
There was, okay, I'm just sorry, because you brought it up, there are like two or three times in like the latter seasons where I'm yelling at the TV. It's the healthcare episode.
Yeah.
He literally gets changed across the room with the mobile emitter on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that.
So did they beam it as well as transfer his program? Or I thought, did he have the mobile emitter on when he was there?
Yes.
I thought he was part of like the holographic system on the station.
Yeah, well, there wasn't one in the down below or whatever you want to call it. That's a bad term. I know, but anyway,
the red sector.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't. Okay, I know.
But it happens like twice where like he like shimmers or moves, and I'm like, he's wearing the mobile emitter. Where is that?
Yeah, he's beaming places, it should literally just be like this tiny little shimmer on his shoulder. That's it. There's nothing else to beam. It's just photons.
Or unless he's by himself, have somebody hold the mobile emitter until they get down.
That would
have
been a cool limitation that you can't have his program active while it's beaming.
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
These are nitpicks, honestly. Yeah. They're not a big...
Let's just throw the character away, Daniel. Obviously, we don't need him. I mean, it's just...
Photons be free.
Just turn off the annular confinement.
No. I love the Doctor. He's an amazing character. I do nitpick on that sometimes, but I get the utility of it and why it's like, you know... I imagine in the first year, Robert Picardo was probably going a little stir crazy, literally only having scenes in the sick bay.
In one set.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
I get it. They got around it, and it works sometimes. It doesn't work other times, and literally 95% of the time, I don't even think about it, so it's not even, like, a huge issue. It is
at
interesting.
At least they had, you know, the wherewithal to make sure, like, whenever he's not in the hall, in a holodeck or in sickbay, he has a mobile emitter. Like, I don't think I ever caught a time where they forgot to put it on him when he's in another scene. Like, at least they were consistent in that.
Yeah, and to me, I like the journey of his character, whether it was purposeful or not. Because, like, in the first season, even though it's half a season, but like he's almost not even in that much. Right. Like you see him in the pilot, obviously. I don't think he's in the second episode. Maybe he is, but I don't even think he's in the second episode. And so,
well, like, there's the shrinking episode where his program's got the error and he's like losing 2 centimeters an hour or something.
Yeah, so I mean, he's kind of but he's also limited. Like he acts limited. I mean, Robert Picardo and the Doctor, but like, and so you actually see him have more of a personality each year, literally. True. You know, and even though he always has that curmudgeon base. But he sort of, you know, it's not just sort of the robotic. Just
think of all the plugins they're installing.
That's why it's going to crash a lot. So.
Well, and that's true. In the beginning, you have Kes, which doesn't know anything about Federation or Starfleet or Star Trek-ishness. But the Doctor's kind of only a little bit step higher than that. I mean, he has the knowledge that he's been given, but he still is very rudimentary in that regard. But yeah, I mean, gosh, there's almost too many instances to talk about. Just, I mean, one that stands out is the one where he creates a holographic family to try to, you know, see how that's like. And B'Elanna likes to reprogram that. So it's not like Leave It to Beaver, but instead a little more realistic.
More Married with Children.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know if I'd go with that analogy, but...
But true, with his daughter dying at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, it sucks it to you. Real life, I think it's this, yeah. But to me, and again, this goes to the nature of holograms, my favorite episode is, of course I can't remember the name of it, but it's the one where the Doctor, or we find out his memory is being erased by the crew because of the decision he had to make.
Yes.
With Kim and the crewman who ended up dying, where he had to pick who to save in triage, even though it was an equal thing. And so to me, that is a very good episode. I mean, I love that because I love the ending, because Janeway's approach, because to me, she's always had a very interesting attitude about the Doctor and holographic life forms such as they are. That she's not like a Pulaski about Data, you know, re-holograms analogy. But she's not super liberal either. So I feel like, you know, there's times when she respects the Doctor, and other times she's like, yeah, he's a hyperspray. And so I think there's an episode where you see her evolving because, you know, they have this problem with the Doctor. You know what? It's a machine. Just delete the memory. It's done. But then maybe the best way to solve this problem is to treat him like a sentient being and let him process it like anyone would have to process trauma. And so that last scene with her just sitting alone with the Doctor in the holodeck reading a book while he just sits there and thinks, to me that's one of my favorite moments in Voyager.
And they just not only just doing stuff with the character, but just again it presented so many unique aspects to the episodes where you have this, you know, like when they're down on a planet and or Eye of the Needle Blink of the Eye, where he gets beamed down to the planet for like a couple of seconds or a minute and it ends up like several years, but he just totally blends in and it doesn't affect him at all. Or, you know, I think I love the ECH episodes where it's almost comic booky. It's just so fun. And it's like his daydream and he's just like the little pips go like, choo-choo-choo-choo-choo. And it's just so fun because you're just like, oh, she's just having fun. And, you know, from other times when, his whole development with Seven and their characters interacting as, you know, just not human, but, you know, he's kind of a halfway between, you know, Borg and I don't know. They utilize him a lot and very effectively too, just like we get like Data or Odo, I'd say.
Well,
in the
I was
going to
say, Daniel, you're one who often talks about the realism of what Data would be like and think like and how he would operate. To you, the Doctor, who has this entire library in his head and can operate probably as fast as he can, do you think we always saw a realistic depiction of what the Doctor would be like?
Well, really, when you come down to it, the only difference between Data and the Doctor or anybody that we've been talking about all tonight is... Data is self-contained, where the Doctor and Vic Fontaine and all those are just shells. Their programs are just elements of the computer. Data is just his own computer. They would get along, I would imagine, quite a bit, because they think in exactly the same way. The Doctor is just a part of Voyager, essentially. I mean, he is a way to extract sentience out of the computer, which obviously the Enterprise did all the time as well, and Deep Space Nine with Vic Fontaine. These programs, which are just things that are run by the computer, are obviously just slightly different in the fact that they don't have a physical body. He doesn't get a body, but he's still, his brain is Voyager.
I was listening to Nerneptual today, and Tristan and the girl were talking about AI, and they talked about how the computer, you know, in Star Trek, isn't really an AI. It's just kind of a verbal interface. The computer doesn't really think. I mean, it's right. I'd say it's right on the edge. Oof. Like at one end of the spectrum, you have someone like the Doctor, who is obviously like a personality, and maybe it's the personality that's the difference. But then with the, you know, the Star Trek computer, it does respond to your commands. It does talk to you, but it's always in a response way. It doesn't really think in that regard or make decisions.
Okay, I would definitely disagree with that statement in general, because I do think that there are plenty of times that the computer actually gives you full information without being prompted. But I would also disagree in the fact that, like I said, the same computer that they're talking to for the replicator stuff is the hardware that the Doctor runs on. Right. It is the same thing. I mean, it's
the program that's the difference.
It's the program that's the difference. It's just software, which is the difference, which is obviously significant. But even then, I would definitely say you would have a hard time to argue that the ships in Star Trek, that the main computers of the ships are not. You could argue that they may not be self-aware sentient, although that would be a tough argument, I think, still. They're definitely artificial intelligence.
What if it's one of your third criteria, Daniel? What then? Would you let the Enterprise computer reject or refit? No.
The Enterprise computer has created life.
That's what I'm exactly what I'm saying.
That's true. But then that life left, so.
But that's all children do, ungrateful brats.
But no, and I think it definitely comes down to the program. And I also think a big portion of how we view it as humans is personality. Is the fact that the Enterprise or the ship's computer doesn't talk to you as if it is a life form. You know, it doesn't refer to itself, or it doesn't, you know, start a conversation. It's much more. Yes, I do understand what you're saying, Daniel, where there's times where it will prompt you or give you information you didn't necessarily ask for, but it is still, at its heart, an input-output method of the computer. It just happens
aren't
to be verbal.
All, Darren? And isn't this, all? Isn't this the exact philosophical questions that they ask with Doctor episodes and stuff? What is the difference? I mean, right. I would do. Contend that, yes.
You know, I'm not willing to say the Doctor is a life form, Daniel, but I will say he is an author. So yes, I mean we obviously mentioned like author having a ton of parallels to Measure of Man, and not quite as, you know, Janeway doesn't quite get as big a speech, but
well,
that's not the point.
I mean, I think author has too many episodes going on in that one episode. I think there are about 2 to 3 episodes in that episode, so it's like you could have the Doctor creates a funny story episode holodeck. You could have the Doctor fights for his rights episode, but like
make it
that
the author trilogy.
Yeah, it was a little too much because like there was like I think the last 10 minutes was the trial, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, that could have been the episode instead of 10 minutes, the fourth act. But and then we have is it Prometheus, the name of the episode where, or Lifeline, one of those.
Oh,
where
he goes home.
Yeah, where he goes home and meets the EMH Mark II. Oh, the joys of the time with the EMH Mark II.
Well, see, this is that's a great episode. One problem I have is I think we're going into Data territory where, you know, you have Data's mom and something like, okay, well, hold on now. So
well, at least it's played by a different actor. It's not like he's interacting with another EMH Mark I.
That's true. But I'm saying with the young lady, I don't know what her role would be called, but like, she was a pretty advanced hologram, you know. I mean, it's not like, you know, if you can make him that advanced, then I think you can do anything you want.
That's true, but But yeah, but I think they, you know, it's interesting. Or an iguana. It's interesting, even with a holographic doctor and all the holographic stuff that's going on in the sick bay, we still get a lot of holodeck episodes. So you think we'd have less of those, but we still get a good amount of holodeck not working and causing more problems than it's worth. But we're not talking about holodecks today. We're talking about holographic characters. But any other closing thoughts on the doctor, Dimmerman, Schweitzer, whatever you want to call him? He does go through a couple of names. Van Gogh.
Joe.
Joe. It took 33 years to come up with Joe.
And then he got married.
Yeah. Not to Seven of Nine, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
Well, she was a blonde, too, so I think he has a type.
Yeah. Well, was she a Borg?
No. Well, not that type.
Oh, okay.
But although that'd be another interesting thing is, like, you know, the Doctor's basically immortal. Actually, a little more immortal than some other artificial life forms we know. In the fact that, you know, is he going to watch his wife grow old and die? Because is he going to have his program age in the same way? I don't know.
Or is he going to have a midlife crisis and just keep him, you know, all the
called
same
a reboot.
Age?
Yeah.
He seems to have midlife crises.
I totally don't
enough.
Remember you telling me to do that, honey. That memory algorithm is just gone. It can't blame me. Blame the hardware or software. All right. Well, this has been a fun tour around not just the holodeck, but these holographic, you know, life forms. And I don't really think we're going to get much of this in Discovery, because we always seem to end our shows talking about Discovery. But just the time period it's placed in, I would be surprised if they had anything in this much complexity. But who knows?
Well, like you were talking about Light Fantastic, and, mm-hmm. you know, goodness forbid I throw some canon out there. But if we're going to get early Harry Mudd, shouldn't he be married?
To one of the androids?
No.
Or to his wife that he replaces with the androids?
Exactly.
I don't know a lot of TOS. It's the my
Well,
my
no, yeah.
Spot,
so in Mudd's Women, the ha-ha funny, it's not because it's sexist, was that he created an android of his ex-wife so he could tell her to shut up. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. and then at the end of the yeah. episode...
So we could actually see his actual wife if...
Yeah, and so at the end of the episode, Kirk and co. make like a bunch of copies of that android ex-wife because, that's funny. But anyway, I'm saying
so nothing.
That we've introduced that element. I'm saying he should be married. Guys, Discovery, come on now. I've just out-nerded you.
But, you know, they got time to still write the rest of the series. So, you know.
Time
what
for
do you mean?
Time
it's totally done.
Time.
It's all just got some spit and polish. And.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Daniel, if someone wanted to talk to you about the best name for the Doctor, where would they find you?
They could get a hold of me on Twitter, at one of Dan. That is the number one, not the word, as in Dan would be the number one choice, obviously.
And Philip, if someone wanted to talk to you about Harry Mudd's problems, where could they find you?
Oh, there's so many problems. They can find me at NC Public Servant on Twitter.
And if someone wanted to contact me about holographic life forms, they can find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi. Now, Daniel, what are we going to be talking about next week?
We are going to be talking about our favorite holographic weddings. So that'll be fun.
I feel like you just combined the last 2 weeks into one, Daniel. I don't think there's going to be a very long episode there.
No, we won't be talking about that. But what we will be talking about is another surprise.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
To be fair,
I forgot that we were doing a duplicate episode this week, so I didn't realize I was going to have that.
Stop pulling back the curtain, Daniel. There's nothing to see here behind the curtain. I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
Stranded here on City Alpha 3.